James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, and we have a great guest tonight again, Brooke Vagnew. We tried to do a replay last week, and I guess it died out about halfway through. If you're having trouble logging on, I know if you're hearing me right now, you're probably already on, but we're totally overloading the band here. We have so many listeners, and they're adding new bands right now. So if you get bumped off or can't get back on, just be patient, and they're trying to expand the stream so we can accommodate the listeners, the new listeners coming in. Hopefully, Brooks is still with us. Are you there, Brooks? Okay, we're back on the air, I hope. Brooks, are you there?
Yes, I am, James.
Okay. Our poor producer there, Don. he's scrambling trying to add new lines.
You know, well, we've had a lot of popularity in the last 90 days.
Oh, yeah.
I've been drinking around the country.
Yeah, people sense something. They feel something's coming, that something's up on the horizon. And you know, it just seems that knowingness or that feeling or that interest is just building exponentially.
Well, it doesn't hurt that you and I have been on more AM radio stations together than probably any two hosts in the entire country in the last 7 days.
Yeah, it definitely does. Getting into the Inner Earth Expedition, I wanted to go over that first.
Sure.
How is that going?
Well, it's going pretty well. We hit a couple of roadblocks when it came to producers. We had a producer that probably bit off a little more than he could chew. So we've been interviewing more, and we're getting closer to finding one that can handle an expedition this size.
Oh, great. And you've got, you still have some room on that expedition?
Yes, but, you know, of course, there are some seats that are already spoken for, like you and Dr. Sala and Angelica Whitecliffe, and we have 10 of the best remote viewers on Earth coming with us. We have 33 scientists, and I have 160 more applicants for those 100 seats, and we're sifting through them right now.
Oh, great. So we'll have a full crew.
So we'll have a full crew and 20% alternates in case people will cancel out at the last minute.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's good. You know, there are so many people interested in this. The going back to the inner Earth, now our modern day, whatever, I don't even want to call it modern day, I'd rather call it our dinosaur day geology that we've been taught seems to be totally out of whack there.
Well, it does seem that even the data that we've been collecting the last, oh, let's say 25 years, the science of geology has been regularly throwing out data. Because it doesn't match the paradigm that we've been taught, that the Earth has somewhat solid core, a molten mantle, and then these huge tectonic plates that float around on a molten sea of rock.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the Earth is hollow. From my understanding, all planets are hollow. They're thrown off from suns, and they find a cradle orbit where they continue to cool and then due to centripetal force, start the heavier elements move to the outside and form a crust.
Well, even if they do form in large accretion disks the way astronomers believe they do, because we can kind of look out and see stars doing this,
mm-hmm.
Matter, when it begins to coagulate, will attract itself based on mass. So it doesn't take... Mm-hmm. Very much calculation to figure out that all planets form as spheres, not solid balls. If they do form as solid balls, as the matter gets smaller and smaller and smaller, the planet spins faster and faster and faster, and it reaches a position called overspin. And there's a really good example of this in our solar system, and it's Venus. Venus at one time spun so fast, it spit a moon out around it that orbited for a while, but the moon was so large that that orbit eventually got large enough that it broke free and became its own planet, and that's the planet we call Mercury.
Mm. Yeah,
now, some planets...
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, some planets don't spin quite that fast. Their crust merely expand away from the core. so you end up with a solid metal core that's spinning rather slowly, and then a solid crust, which is spinning a little faster. The difference between those two spins creates a magnetosphere, like a big generator.
Mm-hmm. Now, if the Earth were hollow, this is the way it was explained to me, is that, you know, you'd think that if you went into the interior that you would fall towards the center. But that isn't really the case, because the gravity, mass attracts, is the gravity and the attraction to mass. And so if you did go into the interior, you'd actually have gravity holding you down. It would be holding down the water and the plant life and everything else there. It'd probably be a little bit less gravity than we're used to.
Yeah, there's probably a little bit of a tug-of-war going on there, but let's just say you're standing on a bathroom scale right now and you're looking down at your weight. I don't want to know how much you weigh, but you now have the weight of the entire world pulling against you. You're accelerating toward the other side of the planet. But if you were standing on the inside of, say, a crust 850 miles thick, you'd only have the weight of the crust right under your feet pulling against you. The rest of the planet is above your head. And it's pulling against you, except it loses strength with the square of the distance away from you. So you'd actually weigh about a third less than you weigh right now.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, James.
I could go for that.
James?
Yes?
This is Mona.
Hey, how you doing, Mona?
I had a question for Brooks. Are you taking questions yet?
I guess we can.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Okay. I was listening to Dan Lamprecht talking about the shadow zone of the seismic shadow zone of
right.
the planet. And
right.
I was wondering, when it comes to finding the hole at the North Pole, wouldn't you be able to use that exact science with reflections of some type of Pong or seismic, you know, some seismic replicating
thing? You might be able to, except that there's no accelerometer near the location where we're going. There are a network of accelerometers around the planet that measure the vibrations from earthquakes.
Right.
The shadow zones, according to geologists, are the areas above 105 degrees. They sort of draw a dotted line in there when they get a vibration that comes in. They don't really know where it comes from.
Right.
So they draw a nice little squiggly dotted line and say, it came from this earthquake on the other side of the planet and came through our solid core. But Jan Lambrecht did do a very nice math model that shows that vibrating around the outside along the crust and then coming up to that point, and the lines work out rather nicely.
Right.
Unfortunately, the sea is about 4,200 meters deep where we're going. So vibrations through the Earth are not going to do us much good at that point. I wish they did.
Right. So has the actual entrance that you're looking for been mapped out? I mean, have you been able to identify the area?
It's been mapped out by our two historians, and through Aurora Borealis data photographs that we've been able to gather over the years, and also by eyewitness accounts, people that have sailed near that area. There appears to be what's termed a sea depression. That is to say, the sea is not level all the way around the planet. It dips in at a certain point, which belies a lower gravity at that point in the crust. It's interesting, so we're going to go measure it.
Great. Well, that was my question.
All right,
well,
thanks, Mona.
Question.
Okay. See you, James.
Thanks, Mona.
All right,
bye. Take care. Yeah, the Earth is actually more like a donut. It's flattened at the top and the bottom. It's not a perfect sphere like NASA would like us to believe.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It has to be thicker at the equator and thinner at the poles.
I think it's 10 miles or something, or 10 kilometers. I'm not sure, thicker at the equator just because of the centripetal force, I believe.
It's probably more like 100 or 150 miles thicker.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard different stories on that. So, I guess it depends on who you talk to. With, you know, when you call NASA or talk to them, you know, it's never a straight answer they give you. They'll give you 10 different answers on 10 different days, it seems.
Well, yeah, it seems the more scientists that I talk to, and I talk to people that are traditionalists in the science, And I asked them a question. Have you ever been there? Have you ever gone up there and actually measured it? No, we haven't gone there. But we know that's the way it is. So I always invite them to join our team and come with us and let's go see. But they always turn me down. Oh, we don't have to go. We know how it's done.
Yeah, it's kind of like the flat earth, you know. It's like this is going to be bigger than the turning upside down the flat earth program back in the day.
Yeah, you know what I liken it to? I liken it to Galileo pointing his eyepiece at the clergy, saying, just look through the telescope and you will see planets going by overhead as the earth revolves around the sun. And they refused to look in the telescope. All we're asking the world to do is just look in the telescope with us. Let's go see.
And we have that problem here. We call them armchair investigators. You know, that from a distance, you know, they make all these statements, and it's just unbelievable some of the things they say. And I said, well, you know, and they, you know, they call us all kinds of names, and you name it, you know. And we just said, well, have you ever looked at the evidence? And they said, no, you know. And I said, well, have you ever come up to the ranch and seen for yourself? And they said, no, you know, no.
Yeah, from the safety of their office in Los Angeles, they say UFOs don't exist.
Exactly. And I tell them, I said, well, you know, that's very inconsistent with any kind of science, because there's been no investigation. There's been no science behind your statement. And without investigation, you can't really make an intelligent statement about this. You know, and that.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because they say things like, well, I'll believe it when they land on the White House lawn. And there's two ways to look at that. One is they're never going to land on the White House lawn because there's no intelligent life there.
Mm-hmm.
And the other way to look at it is the way that Robert Stanley does in his incredible book, Close Encounters Over Washington, mm-hmm. is that they already have landed on the White House lawn. And we have photographic proof.
Yeah, they've been there quite a bit. And, you know, they've met with our leadership, and we've made some bad choices in the past, and hopefully we're getting ready to make the right choice this time and align with the more benevolent ones.
You know, a lot of your listeners probably don't know that there is one place in the United States that has more UFO sightings than your ranch, and that's Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be
pretty
surprised.
Incredible, huh?
Yeah, I think they just go there for the entertainment, you know. It's like, what are these monkeys going to do next? But, you know, hopefully they're inspiring a lot of them to make the right decisions and kind of reevaluate where they're going.
Right. Well, that's what we intend to try to do, too, is to inspire the world. Mm-hmm. We hope to come back with enough, over 300 hours of movie footage, and I don't know how many photographs, maybe 10,000 photographs. And from that, we intend to put together the most unbelievable documentary ever done.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be a greeting, you know, with the group that we have going there. They're very aware of what's happening there, and I'm sure we're going to be, you know, have a little greeting there from our friends on the interior.
You know, I've had a lot of people, many, many hundreds of people, especially at these expos when I've been speaking in the last few weeks. And they ask me that question, what do you expect to find when you get there? And, of course, you know, I have to be very conservative. I have to say, look, I'm a scientist. My mind is open. I'm going to meet the terms of this experiment. And one of those terms, one of those conditions of this experiment is to achieve the highest consciousness we possibly can with this group. That's quite a challenge.
It definitely is. You know, when you have a lot of tickled humans there, you know, with different belief systems.
Well, let me ask you a question, James. Are we looking for a third dimensional civilization, or is this a higher dimensional civilization, and we've got to raise our vibrational level a little bit, and they've got to lower their vibration a little bit in order to be seen by one another?
You know, that's a very good question. What's interesting is that we see the ships. There's these ships that are kind of an orange plasma ship, and they're kind of a yellow and orange, and actually those are the ships from the interior. And when they power up, they actually become bright white. So we're actually seeing them in our dimension. We're seeing the ships, and I know people have had contact with the beings from the inner Earth. I think Carlos Diaz is one of them. There's several others. And they said that, you know, they walked kind of out of a frequency into our frequency, and, you know, they could shake hands with them and talk with them, and just like they were just like you or I. So
Wow. They
either seem to have ability to step down into our frequency, or it's a matter of them raising their frequency up, and they actually are a part of their ships. They actually become a part of their ships. So it's the technology and the consciousness that they carry with them is just amazing.
Mm. Well, we're going to do our best to try to raise the consciousness of the ship to the point where we can communicate with them, possibly see them. And if we get this ship in the right place at the right time with the right people, with the right consciousness, we may have a very incredible encounter.
Oh, I agree. I think it's destiny. You know, hopefully.
Well, in your circles that you travel, and you meet a lot more people than I do because you're kind of a mecca, and I highly recommend any listeners that are listening to this program tonight that you make your way to James's. If not now, then you can wait until the next conference up there at your ranch and definitely make it up there for that. What is the general feeling? I mean, do they know we're coming? Are we invited?
It's pretty much timing. They know we're coming. The only thing that concerns me is that one of the other things I wanted to talk about is that there are some major changes coming to this planet, and not just social and economic changes, but, you know, physical as well.
Sure.
So I'm just wondering about the window as far as the timing and everything else going on as far as being successful in this adventure, because I just received an email with it's actually on YouTube, and I put it on the site there, and I think I sent it to you about this wave coming in. And there's some kind of a wave, an energetic wave coming in that a lot of the satellite technicians are talking about it. And there's people that are warning the people about this wave coming in, and they're saying actually it's supposed to hit, you know, around mid-March. So I don't know that. Intuitively, I think the effects of this wave, it may knock out some satellites and kind of mess the grid up for a few days and things like that. That's the feeling I get. But, you know, there's also the possibility of divine intervention or one of these big motherships to power up and shield, you know, the Earth from that. They have that ability to do so. So it's kind of like, it's tricky because I know there's events coming, and I really don't know exactly how much divine intervention we're going to get. And a lot of it is due to our own collective consciousness and the choices that we make.
Well, I haven't heard anything about that other than I know our solar system is about to break the galactic plane. That is going to occur in the next 5 years. And it isn't going to be a sudden thing, like one day we're out of it, the next day we're in it. It's going to be, as we approach this, there will be ripples that show up. And we may actually be feeling some of those. If satellite technicians are beginning to talk about it, then that means that some of the, shall we call it the riptide, they're beginning to feel and beginning to sense. It will be cataclysmic, but I don't know if it'll be a planet-destroying wave. It's understood that the last time this happened, some 26,000 years ago, it was called the Black Axiom. It actually coated every single body in our solar system. It came through so quickly, though, that a lot of the planets that don't revolve very quickly, like our moon, you know, turns once every 28 days, they only got coated half. The other half stayed nice and white and clean. And a lot of asteroids are showing up that way, too. Half of them are black, half of them are white, or very light in color. So it's possible that we will go through something like that. It's estimated that the last time the Earth went through it, somewhere around a half a trillion tons of iron meteorites came through the atmosphere, and they there's a nice layer about a meter thick in the Atlantic Ocean to prove it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I heard that the way to restore the plankton is to actually spray iron oxide into the ocean, and you get these big plankton blooms again, and that would restore a lot of the dead zones in our ocean. Maybe this is the universe's way of saying, you know, kind of fertilizing the whole planet and getting things going again.
Yeah, it could be a reboot, but unfortunately,
yeah,
those people that live in houses with wooden roofs aren't going to have too much protection.
Yeah, I think I have a cedar shake roof, so I better go put some metal. Better put some metal on there real quick, huh?
Well, you never know. I mean, if you read in the second chapter of Revelations, it talks about stars falling from heaven, and they wouldn't have to be very big. I mean, a grain of salt traveling at 18,000 miles an hour has a lot of energy in it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, I've heard a lot of people building these UGs, they call them undergrounds, and they're building them with cement, and then they put about a foot of dirt on top of them just to take care of the impact of any meteors. But,
James,
oh, go ahead.
On our program, we talk a lot about emergency preparedness. We have a great store that's one of our sponsors that supplies stuff like that. But my co-author tells me that right now there's a 2 month to 6 month waiting list for shelters, for prefabricated shelters. Every manufacturing facility in the United States is booked out at least 2 months, and the good ones as much as 6 months.
That's amazing.
So I had no idea.
I've seen people everywhere starting to build these, like I was talking about UGs, their undergrounds, and preparing, and intuitively, I think a lot of people are picking up something's on the horizon, and a lot of people are going,
right.
Well, I really don't want to hang out if it gets that ugly, and they're just going to go out with the wave. That's what they think. They just said,
I don't want to be an alarmist. I also feel, and I really feel this, even as a scientist, that there's a great awareness. We're on the verge of a fantastic metamorphosis for the human race.
Mm-hmm.
That it's quite possible that we will make it. We'll make this jump, and we will become a conscious race, and we'll actually rejoin the galactic community.
Oh, I definitely believe that's on the books. As far as the Earth changes, I just don't know the extent of the intervention that we'll be getting. And there is the possibility of these ships powering up and just shielding either some areas or probably even the entire planet if they needed to. But I think, from my inner guidance I've been getting is that some of these changes are necessary just because of the devastation we're doing to the planet right now and being unconscious.
I recently saw a film that was done by a friend of mine, Jose Escamilla, called UFOs, The Greatest Story Ever Denied. In this film, he shows a clip that was actually taken from the space shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
And the space shuttle shows a craft flying underneath it a ways. It was about, I don't know how many, maybe 100 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
But they estimate it to be somewhere between 300 and 400 miles in diameter.
Yeah, I've seen from SOHO pictures, there is ships that seem to look to be about the same size as the Earth itself.
That's
and when I looked at that and they showed the Earth compared to Sun, I went, oh my God, that is one massive object there, and sitting right in front of the Sun, taking on hits, the solar flares and the coronal mass ejection. And I saw one photograph where it expanded its fields. It totally expanded out and blocked a coronal mass ejection that was headed for Earth. So there does seem to be that possibility of intervention.
Well, that's one of the things that we may detect in our expedition as we do our side scan sonar. This is a sonar unit that is actually dragged behind the boat. We're going to drag it about 12,000 to 15,000 feet deep. And it sends a triple beam out and then receives it back and sends that message up the cable to a computer. So it takes kind of a 2 foot wide swath, and then we stitch all these together to make a 3D picture of the bottom of the ocean. If there are craft sitting on the bottom of the ocean, they're going to show up in this side scan sonar. If they don't want to be seen and they move, we're also going to pick that up and we're going to get it on film.
Well, that'd be amazing. Yeah, they'll probably like fly under your gear and wave at you.
Well, that's what we're thinking. That they know we're coming, and our consciousness is going to be, our intention is going to be focused on them and on making contact with them. And I think that if they're there, they're going to make themselves known.
I think this
is going to be pretty fantastic.
Yeah, the word intention is so important because, going into space with the wrong intention, which is what we have been doing quite a bit, there's a lot of military up there, military payloads constantly. That's definitely a no-no. They're not really happy with that. And, it all boils down to intention. What is your intent? And until we clean up our act and learn about pure intent and have an open mind and a loving heart, they're just going to kind of, be in the shadows and be that elusive thing that we never know anything about. But as soon as we change our consciousness and change our intent, we're going to open up to the rest of the universe, and I'm sure even the inner Earth people are going to feel that, and decide, okay, let's say hi to these guys.
It's kind of interesting. We've been doing this expedition, planning it for almost a year now, fairly heavy, well, ever since August of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And last Thursday at 6:01 in the morning, NASA launched a very, very hurried and low-press experiment. They sent 5 satellites up into orbit. These 5 satellites are designed to measure the aurora borealis to figure out why in the world this thing changes from streaks in the sky to dancing ribbons, and why it seems to originate in the lower atmosphere and then rise up to the upper atmosphere before we see it above us.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds to me like the aurora borealis may actually be caused by ions pouring out of the center of the Earth, driven by our own magnetic flux instead of a solar wind.
It could even be a central sun beaming out, into space, and that's where the reflection off the ice crystals is.
Imagine that.
From the bottom up, not from the top down.
Well, it just seems strange that they would launch 5 satellites to try to gather that data before we go.
Well, I think they want to watch the cruise, They want to keep an eye on it on this trip.
Oh, we have some real surprises up our sleeves. I don't even want to talk about it on the radio. Very, very high-tech surprises for whoever might be monitoring us.
Oh, great. Yeah, it should be an interesting event. The, talking about the visitors, were you aware that, I don't know if you're aware of that, but I was on the Art Bell Show just right after you were, actually. You were on the day before, and thanks for the wonderful plug about your experience here with the UFOs and everything. It gives a lot more credibility to.
My pleasure, my pleasure.
That just adds to the hundreds of Boeing engineers and all the other people that have been up here. But it was pretty awesome. Hang on a second. I think we have a caller. Do we have a caller?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, my name is Joe Gardner.
Hello, Joe.
I said my whole name. I'm in West Virginia, Huntington, West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
Last 2 nights in a row, saw something pretty unusual. Taking my lunch break at work. Well, actually, it was my dinner break. It was in the evening. Thursday night at about 8:30 or so, took my lunch break or dinner break. Walked outside, and it's pretty dark outside. Clear sky. could see every star in the sky, saw the, you know, almost the half moon. Really nice outside. I noticed a really strange star low on the horizon, just across the river from me, over Proctorville. It was pretty much like a flaming ice cream cone, for lack of a better description. I looked at it. I noticed
it. Wow, did it move?
Yeah, it did. It did a few things. It was pretty interesting. What happened was I noticed it right away, and I've seen a few things before. And I told myself, you know, that's kind of weird. That's an awful, strange-looking low star. And, it wasn't. I'm familiar with the celestial bodies and positions of stars and whatnot. But I definitely, knew this wasn't a star. But it had a star-like quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at it. I walked towards my truck. And then I decided, I'm just going to go walk a little bit further towards the end of the parking lot to get away from all the street lights and the whitewash from the lights to get a better look at this thing. So I picked a nice spot by a telephone pole, and I framed this object in my field of view using the side of a hill, because it was just to the left of the side of this hill across the Ohio River, and it looked like it was hovering above Proctorville, Ohio, around Route 775, maybe a little bit further north towards Scottstown. And I looked at it and just kept looking at it. I knew it was unusual. And I just wanted to watch it and see if it was going to do something. I kept my reservations. I didn't get excited or jump to any conclusions, but I was just like, man, it's awful unusual. Let me get a little bit better look. So I walked to where there wasn't so much light, and I watched this thing, and it seemed to kind of pulse. Had a slight pulse to it. Looked like it was undulating under the surface. You know, it had like an organic quality to it.
Yeah.
It was very, very strange. I mean, just when you see something like that, you take notice.
Mm-hmm.
And what really got my attention was right underneath it came, just to the east of it. Now, I'm standing looking north, and to my right is eastwards. To the left is west. To the left is Chesapeake Airport, a little small airstrip, not what you consider an airport, which is just, big enough for little biplanes and, or, little small planes and whatnot.
Right.
And I seen an airplane approaching. This is around 8:30 or so at night. It's dark, but I see the blinking red light of the FAA transponder on the left side of the wing,
you
see most airplanes. And this thing started to shrink down and became just a speck. As the airplane went underneath it, it stayed still, the object did, that was above it. As it exited towards the left and was out of the field of that view there, of the area there, the object brightened up again and took that cone shape. And I kind of smiled and giggled inside. And I just kind of looked at it, and studied it a little bit more, just, thinking, okay, now let's see what time it is. Let me take a good look at the sky. I see a lot of airplanes around here. Well, not like you can see like small craft, like little blinking airplanes way up high in the sky. Usually it's time of year where it's real clear. You see the little, FAA lights and the contrail, of course,
Mm-hmm.
And I took note. And I was like, yeah, it's a pretty clear night, and that was just highly unusual. There's no other explanation for it. It's not a celestial body. It's not a weather phenomenon. It's nothing that has to do with the airport. And the fact that I seen an airplane approach from the east and go underneath it, when it shrunk down, that's what really set me off.
Did you happen to listen to the Art Bell show by any chance, where we did the contact?
No. As a matter of fact, I talked to an investigator from Cleveland, Ohio, and she told me to, contact that Coast to Coast site or something like that. But I found you guys instead, and I talked to the guy who fielded your calls, and he and I made a connection over the phone, and I felt like, I was talking with some people who, understand this, and I feel like, they'll help me understand myself and whatever's going on a little bit better.
Okay, thanks. But
also, the thing reappeared last night, and I just happened to be lucky enough to find a witness. I told the security guard the night before, I was like, you ever see anything unusual? or have you seen anything unusual out here in the parking lot while you're walking around stuff? And he's like, no. And I was like, well, I saw something over there, and I described it to him and showed him approximately where I saw it. And that was on Thursday night. And then last night at work, when I took my break, about 8:15, went outside. It was a very clear night last night. You still see the moon and everything out. And as soon as I walked out the door, I seen the object again, but it was at a slightly higher position, a little bit closer towards me, like it was just over the river. Or maybe on the banks, just on the banks of the high river, not quite so far away, like over the townships and whatnot. And I motioned the security guard to come over. I'm sorry.
I said, fascinating. Keep going.
Well, and see, I'm just so happy that I had somebody standing there with me, you know. And the security guard, he looked at it. I mean, as soon as he came out the door and stood beside me, I didn't even point up at it and say, look you there, or anything like that. He immediately tilted up his head and looked at it and was like, huh, like it. Now, the funny thing is, when I first saw it, when I came outside last night at break, and I saw it right away. I kind of looked around for it because I've seen something like this before, and I've heard that they will sometimes revisit the area again and whatnot, but that's never happened to me. But this time it did. And I was looking at it for maybe about 5 or 10 seconds just to make sure that I wasn't looking at something else, like an airplane coming head-on at me with the headlights or a helicopter or anything
yeah.
else.
Were right. there again? Noticed, did sorry? You try again to see it, like, after...
We went there again tonight, but it was pouring rain and ice outside. It wasn't like it was last night. It wasn't nice and clear, and it's pretty
it's
pretty
snowing
nice
here now.
Right now, yes. But the security
guard. Thanks a lot for giving us that that description of whatever that thing was. You know? But
bring a video camera to work.
I'm sorry.
Bring a video camera to work.
No doubt. You know. I had a friend of mine come along this evening. He has binoculars. They have the built-in camcorder with night vision. And it's a pretty nice little toy. I'm pretty ancient when it comes to technology. I don't even like messing around with the computer too much. Back to my story, the security guard stood right beside me. And the funny thing about it, when he came over and took notice, that's when it began to move. It took a path and went around a hill, and then it slowly dipped down. Like you were ducking behind something to avoid being seen. But we still could kind of follow it. He and I walked probably 15 yards or so, and I had to stand up on a curb in the parking lot to get a little bit better view of this thing, and we could see it through the trees. And, you know, we watched it until it just dipped completely out of sight. Now, I spent the rest of my break. In fact, I didn't get in trouble last night at work for it, but I was late coming back from work. Because I walked down this little dirt road to try to get a better look at it, or this little muddy half one lane road kind of situation, and because I was curious, I wanted to see more. I mean, anyway, I went back and I asked the security guard. I said, in your own words, what did you see? And he said it looked like an ice cream cone. And he took his finger, and with the door where he guards at, it's a glass door. He took his finger and he drew in the fog. On the window, and he drew an ice cream cone shape with a rounded top, and he said, and it had a long tail. And the funny thing about this is, I said, you ever seen anything like that before? And he kind of smiled and said, matter of fact, I have in Lincoln County. And he gave me a couple of his sightings and stuff. And now, I don't believe in synchronicity or whatnot. Maybe I should look into stuff, but there's some strong coincidences. Now, for somebody to have a previous sighting such as he and I to get, and then to have a current one together without ever knowing each other, never knew the man before in my life, and we started and afterwards we had a little conversation. We started talking about family. Had a couple family members recently deceased and stuff, and he talked about where he worked at, and I explained to him. I said, yeah, my father just recently passed away, and he worked right over there at the nickel plant. And he said, and he saw my name and everything, and he looked at my face, and he goes, I know who your dad is. He used to come out to the front station, the nurse's station, to get his blood pressure and his diabetes checked. And I was like, yeah, my dad, And we started talking and stuff, and I mean, that's just something altogether different, but, it just somehow, it just, I don't know. You know, it's just kind of like, you know, I called you guys instead of Art Bell or somebody else or whatever, you know.
Hey, we'll give Art a call.
I don't know about that. You've got to pay money to even listen to a show now, so I don't know.
Yeah. You called the right place, my friend. Yeah.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, brother.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for giving us your story there. It sounds pretty awesome.
But I'll tell you, if I could tell you a little bit more, I mean, if you want to listen to me or not.
We've got to get on with our show here. I've got a lot of real important questions I've got to ask Brooks here.
Okay.
About some of these upcoming earth changes. So.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
Thanks so much for calling in, and call back again later. If you can help me, what's coming next? What can I do? What should I do? Is there anything any of us can do to be prepared? Because I've had 5 sightings in 10 years, and they've gotten progressively stronger. Well, I don't need a camcorder. The second one I had, I heard a message in my head. I looked at it, and I heard a message in my head. It told me, no, not now. I wanted to speak to them. I looked at this object on April the 7th, 1999. It was a Wednesday night at about 11:45 at night. I got off work, took my dog around the corner to do her business. Wasn't doing anything in particular. Looked up in the sky. I saw what looked like a crystal piece of a chandelier. It looked like 2 pyramids stuck together at the bottoms, at the bases. And it was rotating counterclockwise, and it was surrounded by blue and green flames like that of a gas burner. Mm-hmm. And instead of calling a white light down to the ground. Now, when I saw it, I immediately knew what it was. I know it wasn't an airplane or a star or whatever. But I looked at it, and I was like, aha, I see you. I see you. Who are you? What are you doing here? And there was a pause. I mean, I didn't think anything else. And I was kind of thinking this in my head, not thinking directly at it. And I said, why won't you speak to me? And I heard, like, somebody hit me in the back of the head with a baseball bat. No, not now. Like a parent talking to a child.
Yeah, I would just keep working on meditating and trying to create a telepathic connection with them. And the more you work on that, the more they're going to work with you and give you more and more information. And when you get that information, be sure and let us know.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like you're making a good connection there, a lot better than I've ever been able to do. So stay in touch with both of us. You can get a hold of James right here at his website at BBS Radio or me, either one.
Well, you know what's kind of interesting, too? After that sighting, I went there about 2 days after to take a picture. I do oil paintings when I'm not working, and I've got a BFA in art, but I'm a bill collector by trade because I got to make money to pay the bills. I went there and I took a picture of this in broad daylight, and when I got it developed, lo and behold, there's something unusual on it, and I've held on to that picture ever since. And even my girlfriend at the time, she said, let me see your negatives, and I had no idea that you could verify one with the other. And she looked at it, and she said, oh, my God, it's on this negative, too. And we held it up the light, and very enough, sure it was, you know.
Yeah, I just keep taking pictures and keep documenting it, and then stay tuned. Let us know, you know, how this unfolds.
Okay, well, I appreciate you guys hearing me out, man. I'm glad that I'm not going crazy by myself.
No, the whole world is seeing this.
There you go.
The experiment that we did with on the Art Bell Show, where we actually told people to fill yourself up with the most loving, joyous memory you could think of, and send it out, and focus on the benevolent, you know, ETs and the more loving, joyous, higher frequency ones, and send that invitation out and just say, you know, I want to know, is this for real? I want contact. We'd love any help we can get, you know, with the, you know, restoration of the earth and cleaning up the consciousness and the energy here. And people did it, and sure enough, they were so flooded with people that actually had contact. They had messages come to them. They saw ships. I mean, literally thousands. They couldn't keep up with the emails and the people calling in. It was just overwhelming. So
that's great.
It worked. You know, the experiment worked.
Are we reaching
a
critical mass now? Is it getting to that point to where, you know, it's just going to be full blown or something?
We're getting very close, my friend. Very, very close.
Yeah, we're getting ready to join the rest of the universe, and we just have a few dark hearts here trying to keep us, you know, under their thumb, and that's kind of bending in on itself as we speak. The new frequencies coming in are making it very hard for them to function.
I mean, for the longest time, I even went to a psychotherapist, and that was a waste of money and a big mistake. but I felt like I've been walking on a fence between two worlds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
I got
the world I know, and then I got this unknown that is beautiful. It's mysterious. It's amazing. It's inspiring. And then I got the world I know, the day to day, ho hum, drum.
Yeah.
You know. But
one thing that will keep you going is you can't deny the feeling that comes with those connections.
Right.
And just remember that, you know, in your day-to-day work. Remember the exchange of energy and feeling that comes with that contact.
Now, the first one I saw, I got a sick feeling. I was repulsed. I wanted to run and hide when I saw this green sphere streak across the sky. The second UFO sighting I had, it was like my heart was just filling. It was spilling over with love, elation, joy. I was blissed out for 3 days after that. When I saw that diamond-shaped craft, I wanted to go to a mountaintop and pray.
Yeah, that's kind of what
I just started going to church with my mom. I'm sorry?
That's kind of what Brooks experienced up here. Do you want to tell him about your experience, Brooks?
Sure. I want to hear it.
Well, I actually wasn't going to go to James's. I kind of waffled on it for a while, and he kept inviting me and said, why don't you come out and speak at the Science, Spirit, and Earth Transformation Conference? So I finally agreed, and about 6 weeks before the conference, I bought my ticket, and the day came, and I went out, and Thursday went by, and Friday went by, and I was learning to meditate, and I was learning about all this whole community. I didn't even know it existed out there. Saturday night, I'm in a group, and I'm meditating. We're facing Mount Adams, and this conduit opens up between the mountain and my chest, and it felt like a puff of wind going, you know, beating on my chest very softly. And I checked over my body to make sure it wasn't my heartbeat or, you know, any muscle spasms or anything like that. It wasn't. It was something external to me. And in that conduit, I heard sounds. It sounded like singing, and they were singing words like peace and love and joy. And that went on for about 15 minutes, and then it went quiet. And then another voice came, and it was a higher voice, a male voice. And it said the strangest thing. I mean, it said something I was not even anticipating. It said, because you are quick to forgive, you are forgiven. And then the experience ended. And it disconnected. I felt like a voltage went through me, and I just shot awake. And the people that were sitting behind me said, did you see that? And I said, see what? And they said, you had these graphs and charts and diagrams going into your back, and they were colored gold. And one of my friends put their hand on my shoulder, and they said they could see a golden hand over their hand. And it was a remarkable experience. Well, so I went to bed that night, and the next morning I woke up and went downstairs to James's kitchen, and I said, man, I feel so different. And they said, you look different. And during that day, I started, you know, checking other people out, and other people had similar experiences that night. One couple who was sleeping outside, because there were way, way too many people to sleep inside, they were sleeping in tents all over the place out in James's Field, said that a light ship had paused southeast of the property and pulsed for about 15 minutes right around midnight, which is exactly the time that I was meditating. And then it powered down and went away. So over the months, since August until now, that download, and that's what people are calling it that I had, was this download, those images are beginning to make themselves known to me, and I'm recording them in my lab notebook. Some of them look like maps. Some of them look like numbers. One of them was a phoenix. And that's why in September of last year, we formed the Phoenix Science Foundation, which is my organization that's now planning this expedition to the North Pole. So all of this seems to fit together. Why, I don't know, but I'm going with it, and I feel great.
It is pretty awesome. It's a life-changing. I tell people, come up to the ranch, but don't expect to go back the same.
Where's this place you guys speaking of?
Trout Lake, Washington.
Yeah, if you go to eSETI.org or have one of your friends, you can go to a library and just type in eSETI.org. You can look at all the photos, and it talks about all the events and everything else going on up here at the ranch. It's a retreat center. It's a spiritual retreat center that
Is it open to everybody?
Due to the work we were doing, started attracting all these very benevolent, very spiritually and technologically advanced beings.
So is this place, I'm sure you just don't invite anybody and everybody to come up here, right?
Pretty much.
Seriously.
Anybody who wants to have an experience.
Everybody. Don't you have another conference coming up this summer, James?
I do, actually, July 6th through 8th. We've got a major conference coming up, and we're going to have you and quite a few other speakers there. So, we're going to have cutting-edge scientists and authors and teachers and healers and covering everything from ancient archaeology to, just a little bit of everything. UFOs, you name it, we're going to be covering it.
Well, I sure would like to come out there and visit you guys.
Yeah.
I feel better when I'm talking to people like you. I mean, I feel a lot calmer right now. I've been keyed up for like the last 2 days. In fact, I didn't sleep at all the night before. But now, lately, I've just had this real clear-headed feeling.
Well, good. But, I think that's the point we have, or that place we have to get into, where we're just very calm, very clear. There's no fear, and that's when the communication starts. And they don't want to create any fear or, have people turning over in their minds or creating problems.
Well, so, you know what? I took my girlfriend and one of my best friends with me this evening just because I wanted, them to share the experience. And I told them, so my buddy, because I thought his energy would kind of disrupt the situation. And my girlfriend, I wanted her just to come anyway, but nothing happened. But it was a terrible, miserable night outside. But maybe another
time. Yeah, we don't have clear weather. We don't even go out. Every once in a while I'll get a big signal that one's flying over, and I'll feel it in my body, and I'll grab a camera and go out. But usually, if the weather's bad, we just stay inside.
Now, I've had many, many. I wouldn't say many dreams, but I've written down at least 8 of them. And they range from everything from being a dream where I felt like I was beckoned to get out of my bed. And I went out to my front of my house. I went out the front door, and there was a little saucer, about 13, 15 foot wide saucer of a black ball of voidness or pill. It just looked like a ball of nothingness right underneath it. And I've had some other dreams where they were just, pretty odd. One of the first ones, I was standing with a group of people, and I was running around trying to shake them out of a trance, because I was pointing up at the sky saying, do you see that? And it was in the middle of the night, but it was in a familiar part of my town. In fact, it was in the park, and these people were all assembled, and they're looking up at the sky, but they're frozen. And I'm looking up too, and I see these like green fuzzy pill shaped objects come together and form like an upside down letter F. And I'm shaking everybody going, do you see that? And then in my dream, I realized, yeah, they do see it. They just can't respond.
Come up to the ranch. So it sounds like you've made a friend.
I have this evening, Don.
Sounds like you're definitely having some contacts going on. And it'll unfold. Just before you go to bed at night, just ask. Just say, I want to know. I want to know what this is all about and my part in this. And before you go to sleep, and you'll be surprised what happens.
Well, if there's anything I can do, I definitely want to help. I mean, I believe we're all put here for a purpose, and, whatever it is, we got a part to play in this, and I want to know what my part
is. Yeah, we have friends
is.
Out in the universe that are here to help, and we just have to initiate that and ask. It looks like we're coming up to the top of the hour here, so we're going to have to sign off pretty quick. Brooks, is there anything else you want to add to the show tonight?
No, I think it's been about as thorough as we can go in an hour. I always enjoy coming on your program, and anytime I get a chance to talk to James Gilliland, I don't want to pass it up because it's always something exciting. You're always out there where you're sort of, I consider you like a pioneer out in the frontier, and you're seeing things that the rest of the world only dreams about. It's not that you take it for granted. It's that you're at such a high level of vibration and peace that, when we come in contact with you, we mere mortals, we're just in awe of your experience. And frankly, I didn't understand the word sanctuary when I first came to your place. I thought, oh gosh, he's built a sanctuary for the ETs to come so they don't feel threatened. But after 4 days at your place, I finally figured it out, that the sanctuary was for us so that we could come someplace and state our mind and not be called crazy.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's definitely what this is all about. It's a place where everybody comes together and nobody is judged, and everybody can state their mind and be accepted and move forward from there. Well, I have to thank you so much, Brooks, for coming on the show again. And, you know, we'll definitely do it again. As soon as anything new comes up, be sure and get a hold of me.
Always my pleasure, my friend.
Galactic Waves. And, again, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, signing off. Have a great evening. And you too, Brooks. Have a great evening. Good night.
Good night, everybody.